We take the hood off this kid, and blood is running down his forehead.
Yo, sucker, you got a big mouth. It's the national underground thunderbounds, and I stop the ground like a million elephants. A silverback orangutan, you can't stop the train. Who wants up? Don't come unprepared. I'll leave there, but when I leave there, better be a household name. Brother man telling us it ain't gonna rain. So now we sit in a drop top soaking wet, in a silk suit trying not to sweat. Hit somersaults without the net, but this will be the year that we won't forget. 1999.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Mr. Baby Podcast number 4. This week we sat down with our friend Tom Wyson, and he told us about his time in Chicago when he was part of the Second City Improv and Sketch School, some of his more dangerous experiences in Chicago, and a great story of when he was in charge of hazing for, I wouldn't say a fraternity in college, but certainly a interesting group, and how that did not go necessarily as planned. So enjoy this episode, and here we go.
So we're here with Tom.
What's up, Tom?
Hi.
And Tom.
Hello.
Barrel Sean.
Thank you. Yes. And as normal, we'll start off with Tom. Can you give us a 60-second life story?
Yeah, 60-second life story is, I'm from Wisconsin, I guess is the short version, but actually I was born in, like, the Southeast, grew up in Tennessee and Virginia, moved to Wisconsin when I was 14.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I've lived around the U.S. growing up, but my family's from Wisconsin, and I went to high school there. So then I went to college in Minnesota, and
Minnesota.
I mean, Wisconsin and Minnesota both have
really?
Accents. Oh, yeah. Well, because I came from the Southeast, though, I had maybe a little bit of that. And then once I got to the Midwest, I was like, we're going to go neutral. Because I was like 13, 14.
You used to picked up, like, you're an expert at American accents. You're like, I know all the Southern ones. I know all the Midwestern ones.
Yeah,
they tend to blend together. It's like, no. There's like
there's
10
a difference.
Midwestern
yeah, there's a, there is. Because then after college, I moved to Chicago. So, yeah, Chicago has its own, I mean, that is kind of like the Da Bears sketch and from Saturday Night Live. But
I just picture, like, when you move to a place like that, and then you, like, meet a local, especially, like, you know, if their family is, like, immigranted here, wherever it came from, it's like, oh, this thing's real. Like, you actually have this accent.
Oh,
it's,
like,
not a cartoonish version.
And Chicago does have immigrants from so many different places.
Yeah.
Like, for a long time, it was, like, mainly Polish and Irish.
Yeah.
But now there's, like, so many Latinos and also Eastern Europeans, but still Polish and Irish, you know?
Have there been Latin accent mixed with Chicago accent?
Well, I think that's, like, where accents come from, right? I heard
it's like
this theory.
The Spanglish of Chicago.
There is. There is definitely that. I mean, there are a couple Chicago accents now. So.
Well, that's a big thing. I can't remember who was talking about, but it's like whenever I tell people from New Jersey, they're like, oh, that like Jersey accent, they do like Sopranos, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, that's not a New Jersey accent. That's an Italian New Jersey accent. Like, that's just been made up over years of like, like Italians, but not real Italians, American
like
Italians.
Generation.
It's like, just have developed this like weird, like,
but then it's distinct
forget
from,
about
like,
it, like
Brooklyn Italian or like Staten Island Italian. Those are all
Well, I've heard that theory that like, the difference between like Boston and New York is like the difference between Irish accent and Italian accent.
What?
So like,
evolve. Well, that's what I mean. It's like, it's not the original like immigrant. It's the like second or third generation.
Yeah,
it's this like weird like bastardized version. Of,
yeah,
like,
exactly. And the English opens itself up that. Anyway, so, but yeah, that's my life story. That's where I've lived. I lived in Chicago before I moved to Shanghai. And during all that time, I was interested in different stuff, but, like, studied political science in college and then worked in personal finance in Chicago, like, helping people plan their retirement. But at the same time that I was doing that, I was doing a lot of improv comedy, a lot of sketch comedy. So I view, like, the tripod of comedy is sort of, like, stand-up, sketch, and improv, and so whenever I tell people that, they're like, oh man, you should do stand-up here. I'm like, I do like two things like that, but not that a lot. Yeah.
That was not your strongest.
I've just like never done it. To me, never done, I mean, I've gotten up and told stories, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I've done monologues
yeah.
like plenty of times. like just doing a one man sketch by myself. But like never kind of what I never did was like, hi, this is Tom Wiseon. My percept, like this is the stand up persona of Tom Wiseon. I can never decide what I wanted that character to be. So, like, I never did it. I would do monologues and in different characters on stage by myself.
You always felt more comfortable as a character versus, like...
Yeah, I guess you. I could be a host or an MC. Yeah. But, like, I really... Like, the worst is when I'll be like, yeah, man, I love doing improv and sketch. And people are like, oh, dude, tell me a joke. And it's like, I don't...
So what appeals to you about sketch and improv that stand-up doesn't?
It was more like, I guess I got into it because I was like a theater kid in high school, and so...
Oh, you're one of those?
Yeah, I was a theater kid in high school, so it was like very, I did like...
But you're so well adjusted.
Well, that was actually one interesting thing that happened when I moved from Virginia to Wisconsin when I was like 14, and like, it was right before I turned 14. I turned 14 right before 8th grade. I moved that summer. And then I went to 8th grade in Wisconsin, and it was sort of like 7th grade, everybody was copying each other, so I was definitely just copying what people in Virginia were like. And then I moved to Wisconsin, I saw they were all copying each other, and I was like, shit, I don't have time to like make that adjustment again and totally redo my look to look like the Wisconsin kid. So I was just like, well, now actually I was kind of, and I went to a much smaller school, so all of a sudden I was free to sort of break the barriers and be like, I can be a jock and a musical theater nerd and, like, a history nerd.
We've talked about this where if your class is so small enough, there's, like, there's no room for, like, cliques because everyone's... there's only so many people.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, there were sports teams, but it wasn't like, oh, the jocks are dumb and bullies.
Yeah.
And, like, the theater nerds are, like, are total hermit rejects that only talk to each other. It was like because we needed to kind of schedule sports teams' schedules around the musical theater ones so that everybody could make that and then band practice. Yeah.
It's like we're in every club.
What were you like in high school? Are you still very...
Pretty similar, yeah. I think. Pretty similar to what I'm like now. Like, I... because I'd moved a couple times, like, I felt like I made friends and just liked talking to lots of different people.
You weren't, like, totally devastated from being uprooted or...
No, not really. Uh-huh. No, like, I would say, like, my best friends in the world are, like, two guys from high school and two guys from college. Like, I've always had, like, a few best friends and then made friends with wherever I went. Because, you know, I went from state to state to state pretty much, like, every 5 or 7 years.
So when you went to Chicago, I assume for business work?
I mean, I graduated
just out of school,
college.
Just like, it's the big city.
Graduated college and, yeah, I wasn't going to stay in the places where I went to college or high school. Those were really, really small.
Yeah.
Really small places. Like, my high school was in a town of, like, 25,000 people. Mm-hmm. And then the place where I went to college was even smaller than that. Mm-hmm. So, I was like, yeah, I need a job. It was also 2009. And so, like... Right when I graduated was, like, the worst part of the recession. It was, like, the worst class to graduate in for the recession. Maybe the guys the year before were a lot worse, but if they were setting up jobs, it was sort of before the recession was really impacting hiring. So I just moved to Chicago. I was like, well, I did improv in college because it was more connected to theater, to answer Beryl's question. Like, it was... And so... Improv is, like, the same as doing a play or doing even a musical, but you're just doing it spontaneously and you don't have to memorize anything.
Yeah.
So the part that you don't have to memorize anything really appealed to me. Because you can't get it wrong.
It's like, I just want to act, but I hate all the preparation.
Yeah. So, like, also, like, so in high school I was, like, really, I was, like, friendly and I did a lot of things, but also, like, I've always kind of, like, hated rules a little bit, and so improv didn't have rules, so, like, there were teachers who really liked me because I got engaged in interesting classes and would talk, but then there were teachers who really didn't like me because I was a smart ass, and so I'd be like, didn't you say yesterday that, and they'd be like, shut up,
calling out all your contradictions.
Yeah, and so, yeah.
So when you went to Chicago, was Second City as, like, a career... an option for you, or you're like, oh, I'll go for business and then maybe dabble in it?
Well, what I did,
a hobby.
Yeah, I was like, that's why I'm going there. My dream job would be like a comedy writer, like on Colbert Report.
So that was your main focus when you went.
That was like my dream. But I knew that there was no money in it, especially not the first like 5 years.
And luckily there's no money in business right now because it's a recession anyway.
That was it. So I was like, I could
take this window to
exactly
get my dream in entertainment.
Exactly. And I was like, if I'm ultimately going to just go get a desk job, which is what I ultimately will do in some form and am doing now and have done the whole time. Like, I'll have time to do that afterward, like, seek my dream desk job after I try seeking my dream writing job. And so, yeah, I did that for 5 years, but it was actually another fortuitous thing was, like, in 2008, there was a writer's strike, a TV writer's strike, and a guy who had gone to the same college as I did was a writer for Colbert, and he came to visit our college during the strike because there was nothing to do. So he just like he came and worked and like did workshops with us and gave talks about what it's like to be a TV writer. And I like learned about, and so I like had always been like interested in like the careers of people who did that and like people who got on Saturday Night Live. But also like I saw there was an industry of people who weren't the most famous people but we're working in, in that. And so, like, nobody had heard of this guy's name.
Well, that's the interesting thing with writers especially. Yeah. It's like, there are writers that, like, if you knew who they were, they'd be your most favorite celebrity. Yeah. But you just don't realize, like, they've written everything you've loved, but you've never heard their name or seen their face. Yeah. It's like, but without them.
Because it's hard to remember, like, the credits at the end of a TV
exactly.
show. Like, you know, like, who, unless you're really...
I figured that's when you know you're, like, a real nerd about something. Yeah. It's when you can name, like, the producers and the writers and, like, and he executive produced that and that and that and that. It's like,
oh, those are my favorite shows. Yeah. We gotta see the new one he's executive producing. Exactly. Yeah. So that was the kind of stuff. I was like, I want to find a way to work in the industry. And I studied, like, sort of the careers of, like, Tina Fey and Stephen Colbert and the people that worked with them and around them and had a chance to meet people who had been part of some of the big theaters in the U.S. And I basically, what I had decided, although it's not totally true, there are other paths to it, what I had seen people do was, like, there were a couple paths that seemed really a lot of people had taken to get into those positions. And it was either Chicago, New York, or L.A.
Yeah.
And it was at Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York, the UCB, or Second City in Chicago, or the Groundlings in L.A.
Yeah. They all have, like, their...
It was, yeah, and they have theaters in different cities, too, but, like, Second City has one in Toronto that's, that was has been big for a long time.
Yeah, I actually just heard an interview with Eugene Levy, how they like, started that, and I was like, oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Like, a bunch of those guys of that era came out of the Toronto one.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, was, like, Dan Aykroyd involved?
Yeah,
was,
like, Rick Moranis.
Yeah, I mean, just, there were just a huge group of great Canadian comedians. And so, so I was like, oh, this seems like, this is sort of like the grad school I'm going to go to right after college. It's like clown college. I'll go to learn improv at IO and then go into the conservatory at Second City. Because in order to start at the conservatory, like their official, with air quotes, I'd say. But they're very specific about, oh, like, were you, when you say I was involved at Second City, people at Second City are very
of course,
specific
like
about
it's gonna be
what your relationship
how involved
was.
Were you?
Yeah. I was not on, like, the main stage at Second City.
Well, that's like something that, like, is a whole world that, like, I'm not in it, so I don't understand, but, like, I know people who, like, were UCB people, but it's like, what does that mean? Like, cause I know they do a bunch of shows, like, you could... So there's some people who go to one class and they're like, I study at UCB.
Yeah,
it's like, okay.
There's like, but exactly. Yeah. And there's like a difference between like going to a high school summer program at Harvard and being a professor at Harvard. Like, you know,
I went to Harvard pre-college.
But
so, you're saying IO Improv Olympic.
Yeah, Improv Olympic.
Are they connected to Second City? Or?
No, they're sort of like, I think they grew out of the same group of people. Mm-hmm. Like, one name you'll always hear associated with both is Del Close.
Del Close,
yeah. So Del Close was involved in the creation of both of those theaters.
He was big on the creation of improv.
Sort of just the theory of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, and so IO, like, teaches, like, Del's school of improv really well. Second City teaches some improv, but their focus is on creating sketch shows that resemble the Second City main stage show, which is similar to Saturday Night Live without a musical guest. Like, that's basically what you would expect to see at a Second City main stage show.
I didn't realize that. I thought they were more improv.
Well, what they will do in most shows at Second City is a sketch, a set of sketches, and then some improv games at the end that, like, have some audience involvement. Yeah. And then also a lot of their writing style comes from improv. So you sort of, you need to know how to improvise, and then
you write on stage.
Yeah. And then you, if everybody improvises for an hour, we can write down our five best ideas and maybe develop a sketch. A show off of this.
Like recreate later.
Yeah.
What was your first class like? I mean, having some familiarity with what you were getting into.
Yeah.
I mean, were you intimidated? Were you like really enthusiastic?
I was a little intimidated because because I knew so much about what I was getting into, actually made me more intimidated.
Totally.
Because I was like, oh, you were
you were naive and, like, oblivious.
Yeah, I wasn't like, well, this will be fun, we'll see what happens. But the classes are great. The classes, it's like a, in order to get into Second City's classes, you have to have some prerequisites. Either, like, either you have done a year of their, what they call their A through E level, A, B, C, D, E, and that's, like, improv training that... And then, or you could do a year of improv training. They would say like a year of equivalent training. So they kind of have some theaters that they accept.
Yeah.
So IO is one of those. So I did the IO program, which takes like a year or 15 months. And my first class there, I like walked up. It's the, you walk in, it's pretty small. It's right by Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
IO was when I went there. They've moved now. It's down in Lincoln Park. But it was up really close to Wrigley Field, like... three doors down from Wrigley Field, I think. Like, there's a corner... There's Wrigley Field. If you've ever been to Chicago, the first thing that surprised me about seeing Wrigley Field is you're just driving, like, city, field. Oh, my God. A Major League Baseball stadium.
Those, a lot of the older stadiums are like that. Like, there.
And that really surprised me when I first moved there because I had never seen it.
Yeah.
But anyway, if you walk past Wrigley Field... there's a corner store, and then, like, a bar, and then it was at this place. So it's already a pretty cool neighborhood. Yeah. It feels like the major leagues of comedy. And so I was like, all right,
I've made it.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's get in there. And you walk in. There's their main stage is downstairs. You can, like, see it. There's, like, a bar on your right and, like, just a tiny ticket booth. Really small because it's obviously jammed into the city like that. Or you can walk up the stairs. There's another bar and stage. And you can walk past the audience there into a back section where they have all their classes and offices. And that's called, like, the annex.
Yeah.
So when I walked in the door and saw the main stage and walked up the first stairs, I walked past this thing, this photo they had just taken for their 25th anniversary. And right in the, like, bullseye, the center of the photo, was that guy who had come to Carleton, who was a writer for Colbert. I went to Carleton College. Yeah. So I went to college at Carleton. This writer, Peter Gwynn, was an alum from the 90s, and he was a writer at Colbert. He had come there, and I was like, yes, man, that's why I'm going to go do this. And I would walk past him, like, every day for class. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. It was
had
so
you been there before you started classes?
I had seen some shows.
Okay.
Yeah, and, like, shows are, like, $5-$10.
Yeah.
And
yeah, you
once
see,
you're
used
student,
to do a free, like, couple free shows.
Yeah, they'll do, like, free shows for, well, once you're a student, you get free shows.
Uh-huh.
And then
but
some
the
colleges get
free
shows.
Right?
No, the classes are not.
Well, that's a whole thing, which it makes sense in the end, but it's, like, always shocks me is, like, not only the classes, not so much, like, that they have classes or it's expensive or whatever, but how long? Like you said, a year to 15 months, and there's, like, levels. It's like, it's a college. Like, it's
like
a real thing.
Program. Like, it's like comedy college.
And I'm sure if you've been through it, when people are like, oh, it's a real thing, it's like, yeah, fuck you. It is a real
thing.
I mean, we used to go there. It's like, oh, you went to our school? It's like, is this a 2-year program? It's like, no, fuck you. It's a university. Like,
I mean, like, exactly. Like, and, similar to college, once you get through it, you're not guaranteed a job.
Yeah.
So you've got all the training now in theater, and you're allowed to, once you finish the year-long program at Second City, you're allowed to audition for teams at Second City. And once you what you do is, so after you worked yourself up through several levels of classes and graduated.
So after I.O., you did do the full program.
So after I.O., I went to Second City. You have to audition for level one.
Yeah.
And you have to have completed a year of training somewhere or at Second City. Mm-hmm. Or if you did a drama degree. Yeah. Like, then you're allowed to audition. So you audition, if you
can't be a total waste of time.
Yeah, yeah, they're like, don't waste our time in auditions. Yeah. Lots of people want to come and do the auditions.
I guess that makes sense, because they want serious people.
Yeah.
Like, not just like, I want to learn improv.
And they want to make sure that you have the same, like, base of knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, when they start using terms, like, on stage,
when you're in groups,
you start giving
like,
notes.
Yeah.
That you know how to behave in class or on stage. I mean, it's a really well-known theater, and it's, like, right in the middle of Chicago, so, like, you can get yahoos off the street.
Of course.
It's, like...
How big is the school?
I'd say, like, my class at Second City was about a dozen people, maybe 15 people, and then there were maybe three classes going on simultaneous to mine at the same level that I was. And they were graduating class. There were people taking classes at every level at the same time. So when I was in level three, there were people, when I finished level three, who were graduating level six. Yeah, there's, I think, 1, 2, 3, 4, 4A, 5, and then 6 is your performance level.
And do they have, like not majors, but, like, focuses? You can, like, if you're, like, I specifically want to go into, like, sketch writing.
Well, they,
or it's just kind of
that's a
whole,
different,
they try to teach you everything.
That's a different program. But, like, the main conservatory program, they teach you writing and acting the Second City way. In order, and they teach you how to put together a Second City show. So, like, actually one of my favorite things, like, actual tangible takeaways that they gave me, besides just, like, general skills and you know, good ways to evaluate a sketch or develop a sketch. But they gave me, like, the rundown of what a show should be. Like, beginning of act one, and then right after, what's the slot after that? They call everything slots, and so it's like, and every slot has a name.
There's a lot more math to it than you think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There is a real...
Well, that's a funny, like, just hearing interviews from, like, celebrities, like, people who are on Saturday Night Live, who come from, like, stand-up.
Yeah.
They, like, get the job, and then on that show, you need to write your own sketches, and they're like, fuck, I don't know how to actually write a sketch.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a stand-up routine.
Well, I mean, just for us, like, going to art school, you know, I mean, my family members don't really understand what that is. My uncle used to call it advanced kindergarten. But, I mean, it really is, like, a science, you know. It's like a muscle that you just exercise, and the more you do it, the better you are at it.
Yeah, you learn how the pros do it, and then it's kind of up to you what you're going to do with that, you know. Now you're at the skill level of a pro, you decide what your pro career is going to be like, you know. And I, like, when some people, especially people from Chicago who know Second City, I'm like, yeah, I did the training program there. They're like, dude, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, they're like, so are you doing that now? And it's like, well, you know, sometimes I still talk to people.
I guess, so, like, Barrow went to RISD, so it's like, not RISD. Why did I say RISD?
RISD?
She went to, Parsons.
Oh, no.
Sorry. But still, Parsons and, like, New School is a known school.
Yeah.
I went to MICA, which is Maryland College of Art, which on the, like, art universities is, like, up there.
It's
like,
great.
Top five.
Yeah.
But, like, it's not celebrity to anyone.
Yeah.
So it'd be like, I went to MICA, Maryland College of Art. And I always think that name sounds very, like, shitty. So just like, if you do art schools, it's good.
It's
a good
great.
School. It's
yeah.
like, and occasionally you meet someone like who's like, you went there? And
yeah.
Like, yeah.
Well, and so that's how people react to the Second City thing, and they'll be like, man, that's great. Like, so you must be, like, well known. It's like, no.
No.
I kind of tell them, it's almost like if you, or for people who know sports, it's like if you played, if you were on the football team at a D1 school.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's great.
Yeah.
And, you know, like,
it's
you,
D1.
It, yeah. Like, you know, maybe you showed up at the NFL Combine and nobody, you know, like, that's, I've auditioned before.
Yeah.
You know, I've never been
on
a TV
show. Like, I knew somebody in New York, like a friend of a friend,
right,
who, like, got into UCB. And
yeah.
it wasn't until, like, we went to a couple UCB, like, free stand-up shows, and, like, even this guy, it's like, and then I started to realize, like, just because you're UCB, it's like, no, that's not the level I always, like, thought it was. Like, holy shit, you're UCB. But now, looking back, it's like, oh, you're still doing UCB, like... And it's like, you get better, and some people do, but it's also like, just because you're in doesn't necessarily
you're
mean,
you're still
like,
doing it. And so, like, yeah, there are people who are trying to set up sideshows. That became, like, a really busy part of being like a student in the conservatory, it was like, what little theaters are around? What stages are available? Mm-hmm. Everybody is trying to get stage space. So like, how big is the school? Like, okay, there are six levels going through the conservatory.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'd say like all of the different programs the conservatory has probably like 300 students graduating the conservatory a year. And so, and maybe that's small. I'm not sure, but
did they care if people were trying to do like unaffiliated shows?
No. They encourage that. Yeah. They encourage, because there's a huge theater scene in Chicago.
Chicago.
Stages all over the place, but then there's also like huge competition. Like there are thousands of people trying to get on those dozens of stages. Mm-hmm. So dozens is a lot of stages, but still, like, there's a lot of people that want to get there. So
how often were you going? Because you had a full-time job.
Yeah, I had, like, I had a 9-to-5 job, and then I would go, I would say, like, I was at the theater at least 3 days a week, you know. And then if I wasn't at the theater, I would say 3 to 5 days a week on it, when it was, like, in, when I was busy. Mm-hmm. There were lulls sometimes, there were breaks, but, yeah, I mean, the average would have been, 3 to 5 days a week. Yeah. And that means, like,
so is, when I was... So with that is, like, are there... classes every day, and it's like try to show up at least this many times.
Classes are once a week, and they're like 3 hours long for a class. So,
but you would just show up for other.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who are like who work in the service industry, or like servers and waiters and bartenders, and like so they would maybe take class during the day, like maybe a noon or 3 o'clock class. But for other people with like a 9-to-5 job. Which I would say is, like, one-third of the students, like, I would say more work, like, in the service industry. Yeah. But you get people from all walks. I mean, there was, like, retired firefighters in my classes and stuff. It was really interesting. And there were, like, high schoolers. So, like, that whole range. There was, like, always a couple high schoolers and a couple, like, 50-year-olds. But, which is not a bad thing. Those guys had, like, it was, you brought a good flavor to the class to have different people, a different perspective. Learning the same lessons, like getting the same notes, and then seeing how they come out with it.
Take them.
Yeah, that was it. Was good.
That's cool. Yeah, yeah. I was wondering kind of what your student body is kind of like. I just picture it being the cast of SNL.
The main group of it is like 23 to 33-year-olds. Mm-hmm. So there may be some people that are starting a little bit later, like. Mm-hmm. Some people work in creative industries, advertising and stuff. Yeah. Some people who, like I said, work in the service industry. Some people who work at more like accounting or financial kind of stuff. I knew, a guy who did like recruiting for a for-profit college, but they were like one of the good ones, I guess. it was like they were more of like a video game arts school, so like kids actually worked with companies and there were like
developers. I feel like I remember those commercials.
Some of them were really shady, right?
That sounds really familiar, that there was like pre like Phoenix there was like art institute, but there feel like there was
still,
one that was like video games.
There's still Academy of Arts, which is like partially online.
That's the big one.
Yeah, I mean, like, Raven Simone is taking classes there now, which is so weird. Well, but, I mean, apparently a lot of, like, Disney Pixar people came from that school.
Okay. Yeah. I remember there was always one that was, like, it was an art one. It was like, we'll send you the packet.
And oh, it'll my be like, God.
Like, the pirate.
One was like a car. And there was like, a whole thing. And it was like, they ran that commercial all the time. And that was like before the big like internet thing. Where it was like, we'll send you the packet. And you send it back. And it's just like, oh, my God.
Oh, I love that.
Here's a series of watercolor lines from our students.
Did you have anyone in your classes that you like, that either went on to do big things or like, you were like, holy shit, this person is like head and shoulders above.
There were people who were my peers who I thought were head and shoulders above the rest. And, I mean, I was in the scene for 5 years before I moved to Shanghai. And I sort of, when I decided to move to Shanghai, I was kind of like, don't really want to work in that industry. Yeah. Once I saw more and more of it, I was like, wow, this seems really, really frustrating.
A little too unstable.
Yeah, it was really the instability. Mm-hmm. And it was that I saw it wasn't a meritocracy. And that's not complaining about myself. That's about the kind of people we're talking about, who I felt were head and shoulders above the rest. And I was like, and it wasn't about like hard work. It wasn't about them being at the theater enough. Like, I was, like I said, maybe there three nights a week, and they were there, like, 7 days a week at the theater.
Yeah.
And that was either seeing shows or working on shows or taking classes or performing or whatever. People who just, like, lounged around that were, like, lounge lizards.
Yeah, that's, like, just, I mean, I've never been in entertainment, but just hearing so many interviews and other podcasts, it just seems like a, it's always good to do hard work.
Yeah.
But that doesn't, like, that's not a guarantee
success.
And, like, the other way isn't necessarily.
There was no.
It's, like, it's a mix of, you basically are waiting for a lucky break or something, and then do you have the, like, hard work to back that up?
There was
you
no,
still need that, like, chance to hit, like.
That's, you do. You do need chances, and the good chances are always, like, lucky.
Yeah.
They're always good breaks, and you get things that happen all the time that are lucky and unlucky.
Yeah.
And it's sort of about, like, the woman who runs I.O. now, her name is Sharna Halpern, and she likes to say sort of, like, getting a job and, like, getting work on in TV or on stage and in comedy and movies is, like, about being, like, prepared for the opportunities that come around and then, like, kind of trying to put yourself in the way of opportunities. So that's it. And then you don't really have control over what comes down the pike. I mean, that was always what I was trying to do, was I kind of wanted to be more in control. And so, like, you can then go do shows, find a theater, produce a show. That's what we would start doing. Like, friends would form their own groups that were sort of friends you had met in class and buddies they knew from somewhere. Hey, I think we'll mesh, we'll do a show together. And, like, you get a group of 4 to 6 people together, and then you know also 2 or 3 other groups that formed similar to you, and you're like, we're going to produce a show. We're going to pay for the stage space. We'll pay, like, $200 to get a theater, a small theater, for 2 shows this one weekend, and then, like, we'll take the box office. But, like, we're going to pay for the space, so,
Yeah, we've talked about that before. I mean, the big one right now, example of that, was, like, Broad City.
The
girls, they came out of Second City.
They were like, let's do our own thing.
They never got picked, and eventually we're just like, fuck this, why are we trying to audition for them?
Yeah.
Like, let's just do our thing.
So
it worked out.
That's how I always wanted to do it. That's what I always tried to do. But then, maybe that's also sour grapes, because I would audition for, like, Second City, and they're like, well, didn't get picked to move up.
It's more just like, if it's not working, don't just, like, keep going. It's like, one day it will. It's like, do something else.
Yeah.
Like, maybe that'll hit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you gotta try something else. And, like, some guys who were really great at that were my friends who started, like, a recurring show called The Shithole, and they would host it, and there are a lot of people who, like, a lot of houses in Chicago have, like, a separate garage. So it's, like, a 4-story brownstone with a garage behind it, like, with a tiny yard and, like, fence, right? So, like, really narrow houses that are, like, kind of deep in the
block. Yeah, like railroad.
And, like, the back behind it on the alley is a garage. And so they would find people. They would, like, find people. Yeah, so you don't drive, like, you drive past your street. You drive past your front door. You go back to the alley and then park. And they would find people. I wasn't in charge of running the shithole, but I was I had performed at the shithole several times. And the guys who ran it would just, one of them had a garage or another one had a garage. And they would pack, it was like a 2-car garage. They would pack, like, 40, 50 people into this tiny place and have a stage that was sectioned off that was maybe, like, 10 feet by 10 feet over the corner of, like, the garage that was taped off. And people were just passing around, like, 40 racks of beers and watching people perform. It was like, yeah, you made it happen. You made a show, man. And I don't think they charged.
It's so funny how, like, any scene, any creative scene has that. Yeah. Like, you would think, like, that's only, like, a music thing, like a punk show, like
it was like
at art school, it's just like whatever the music is, like this noise, and it's like you'll always find something going on. It's like,
well, and these guys were the kind of guys who lived in, like, these 5-bedroom apartments with, like, 7 other guys, you know, and there was, like, graffiti on the walls, and they skateboarded through, and so it was, like, a very art school punk rock kind of.
But it's not funny because it's just like, they're all punk rock, but it's like, no, it's not music. We all do improv. So we have DIY punk improv in our garage.
That's what it was. And just like you're saying, like, just like any scene, there was like so much hackneyed bullshit. They were like, oh, I don't want to see that. Like, you know, I don't want to see, like, And so in improv, it would be like, don't come on stage and be like, can I get a suggestion from the audience? Yeah. Like, boo!
Yeah. It'll prepare you better. Like.
Did you have a favorite bit? Did you have, like, a go-to bit?
Like, for me? Characters? Like, forming characters is, like, my favorite part of it. Because, like, my favorite thing to do is, like, sort of, like, the exercises where you just kind of form a character out of thin air. Mm-hmm. And then I would just, like, get to know those characters, and you, like, ask yourself, like, what'd they have for breakfast? And you're like, this motherfucker doesn't eat breakfast. You know, like, and you just figure out what... Yeah, you sort of name all the stuff that was true about this character that you were just learning, but you sort of say it like you've always known it. Improv gets very mystical to, like, true believers of it. So sketch is different. Sketch has to, like, follow rules. Mm-hmm. It needs to be, like, what kind of a sketch is this?
Yeah.
And so it was sort of like I was saying about the slots. Like, you open with, like, a big opener. Like, what's it going to be? Probably an ensemble bit. Mm-hmm. Music is always good for an opener if you guys have written a song. If there's only one of your group that sings, have that guy sing and you guys get a dance together. Yeah. You know, we need to show the whole group we're going to open
get
up.
Get energy.
Yeah, like high get energy the crowd right into that. It. Yeah, so that's the opener slot. And then we're going to have, like, another one of your best bits right up next. Like, show them that the show's not going to crap out. Uh-huh. And so then you would do something called, like, a skill set after the second one. Mm-hmm. So, like, just, like, your opener is, like, big show opener ensemble. Then, like, a hot one. Whatever is, like, your good sketch. Yeah. Anyone. Then the third one is, like, a skill set. So it could be, like, if you have a bit with props, or if somebody juggles, or another one if somebody does a song. Mm-hmm. If anybody has something where they're talent. Like, oh, this is weird. We didn't, like, not all other groups do that. So then you do a skill set, and then you do maybe a quieter one if you want, maybe another quieter room one if you have time. You could always intersect in between these bits what's called, like, a blackout, which is never longer than 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. And it's a one-liner joke. Could even be a line, or could just be a physical bit.
It's like, but it's like come 30 joke, seconds. Leave.
Like, one of my favorite.
Used to do those.
Yeah, that's called a blackout. Mm-hmm. You can do a blackout that's just a real short bit, and if you do it, like, two or three in a row, that's called, like, a running blackout. Mm-hmm. So, like, you have a sketch, and you see, like, one of my favorite ones that we wrote. I didn't come up with this character, but we just were like, we got to turn that into a runner.
Yeah.
Like, we got to see this guy again. Was, like, this, one of the guys in my group just started kissing his muscles. Like, he was, like, flexing, like, he just finished at the gym or something. He started, like, he kissed his muscles, like, yeah! And then he just, like, started getting really sensual about it. Like, being like, really like this. Yeah, and, like, it just, like, starts making out with his arms. We're like, this is funny. That's a funny bit. And so it was a good physical bit. There was, like, no lines, but that became a blackout. So in sketch, all I was saying, sketch is very, you need to know what kind of a sketch it is. And, like, Saturday Night Live is very similar to the running order of a Second City one, but they kind of have their own formula. They always do the cold open. They don't announce the show.
Yeah.
It just starts. And then it's always usually, like, a celebrity.
Another thing interesting I've heard before is, like, especially, like, you look at SNL or sketch writing, is there's like five or six, like, ways to end a sketch, or, like, less. There's like, you kind of learn these, like archetypes for sketches, where it's like, there's either the, like, last line is just weird nonsense that's so dumb it can, like, end the sketch, or, like,
it depends on what kind of a sketch it is. It depends on why you wrote that sketch.
Yeah.
Like, why did we write this sketch? And that can happen, like, that question of how do we end it comes up when you really just have, like, a character that you wanted to see, and you see that character do that thing, like, two or three times, and you're like, all right, we're done here, but we're all still on stage. Like, what do we do now?
Yeah.
Do we just have to do her catchphrase again? Yeah, all right, blackout.
Just, like, mumble and walk off. Yeah. Like, something. Like, there's, like, three different endings they'll use.
You want to end on a laugh. Yeah. You always want to end on a laugh. So, but, yeah, there are, like, there are different formulas. It depends on where the sketch came from. Like, is it that we want to see this character? Is it that we wanted to see this scenario? So it's, like, different if you're writing a character or a scenario where you're like, what if we put Donald Trump in a drag show. Like, yeah. How would that character respond to that situation? And so, like...
He's already got a wig on.
Yeah, so then you want to, like, heighten it. Yeah. Like, whatever it becomes. Is he really into it? Or are we going to find as many ways to elevate that idea of him being into it? Or if he's really uncomfortable? How uncomfortable can we make him? Like, does he snap? Or
again, it's like such a science to it.
Yeah,
like unless you learn these things, you don't realize how much goes into it.
But yeah, but I feel like those are skills that you can apply to a million other things in your life.
Yeah, you do.
Like anything about holding somebody's attention. I mean, like structuring, like, you know, client presentation, or like even just like a mixtape, like all of those rules. You know, you start off with a banger, and then, you know,
we used to talk about that. Like, obviously, not an important skill set or important use of that skill set, but I have a good friend who, when I was back in the States, is on Tinder, and he used to use it a lot. I was like, let me look at your photos. Like, I'm gonna like reorder these photos. Like, nah, man. Okay, so you start with something like, they see your face, but it's something interesting, let me click through, and then boom, second photo is like, and then like take it down. Like, oh, a photo with you and the mayor. It's like, oh, he knows the mayor? How does he know the mayor? Swipe again. It's like, you know, it's like, you need to give him a story, man. Like, get them in, then tell a story with your five photos.
I love it.
Really? So, like, why were you on Tinder?
To help him, man.
Downloaded Tinder until, was hanging out with just like six friends at a bar in Chicago, and they were like, oh yeah, we all have Tinder on it. It was like guys and girls, and so it was like, let's pass around our phones. And so we just spent 5 minutes, and then we'd switch, and you move it down. And the rule was, like, if you get a hit, if you get a match, like, you're allowed to send the text on else's phone. Yeah. So it was like, I was like, oh, I want to play this game, so I better download the app.
Yeah. I need to be involved. Yeah, and it's immediately.
Of course.
It sounds like so much fun.
I wanted to play, but it doesn't really, unless you have a VPN on your phone, it doesn't really work in China. So I was doing all of that, and then also auditioning for, like, little opportunities that would come up. Like, I did some industrial films. Okay. So I filmed one, like, for H&R Block that was only seen at H&R Block.
I've done a bunch of those.
So I would do what we call industrial films, which is, like, the level below commercial.
Yeah.
Once it gets seen by the public,
internal commercial.
So I'd do those. The most fun side gig was voicing a video game. That was really, really fun.
Cool. Oh, my God. I got, like, a voiceover demo for a girl that did one of those, and it's just like, it's like,
20 different punches and kicks, and it was great. The one that I did was, like, a real independent gaming studio, like a real mom-and-pop shop thing, but they developed this game that went kind of viral because it had a gimmick. It's called Dive Kick, and Dive Kick has a joystick that moves left and right, and one button. And then when you press the one button, so it's like a side fighter, like Street Fighter. I don't know the official term. But yeah, you know, it looks like Street Fighter. And you have all these different characters that fight each other. And the stick moves left and right. And you press the button and they jump. And you press it again and they dive kick. They like accelerate down and sideways towards the and it's one hit kills. So you like play like a best of five game, but it's like one hit kills, and it just went viral because all these people are like diving and trying to hit each other and like trying not to get
so
hit.
So quick and intense.
One hit,
but
it's
done.
So it went viral at these gaming conventions. I was like, con, and I just concept.
What is that stand
for? GamerCon type things. And it just like kind of blew up, and they were like, we're expanding it, we need some more characters. So they did this one. I played this.
Dive Kick 2.
I played one. It was Dive Kick, like the expanded release, and I played this guy who was based on a friend of theirs, who was a really, I guess, chubby, like, game developer. And so he had like a t-shirt, I think, with some belly showing.
That's
and,
great.
Yeah. And they thought that was my voice, so I was like, let's do it.
That's interesting.
No, they just needed different voices, but that's my...
Did you know them, or did you get, like, hired by them?
Through, like, a friend of a friend, like, through a girl I knew at Second City who had been hired by them, and they were like, they're looking for other voices, and can you do some of that stuff? And that was fun. I didn't get paid very much, but, like, it's my only IMDb credit.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
That's, like, a life goal. Check it out on the list.
Thank you, those guys.
Yeah.
Put it on IMDb.
Crazy. So I guess change pace a little.
Yeah.
You told us you had a story about the scariest thing that ever happened to you while you were in Chicago.
I was just thinking about stories and like moving around and things that were notable. And I sort of realized, I was thinking about living in Chicago, and people, especially now, my job now in Shanghai is helping high school students, Chinese high school students, find universities and apply to universities in the United States. They can find them, obviously, but helping them strategize their college application. So, like, a question that comes up with parents sometimes about Chicago is just like, oh my God, it's so dangerous. And that comes up with Chinese parents, but then it comes up with Americans, too, who don't know the city too well. They're like, Chicago, oh my God, it's so dangerous.
I mean, it's infamous for being,
it's
like,
infamous because it's terrible.
The gun murder capital of the U.S.
And, horrible. You know. It's horrible, and it's really in a really small section of Chicago that are worst hit by
gangs.
Well,
part of it is, like, it's not only that it's known as dangerous, but it's also like the most segregated. So it's very, like, it's very dangerous, but it's, like, certain areas,
exactly.
Like, where all that danger is.
Yeah, no, the things that, like, would really make people make headlines is, like, if there was, like, a mugging on the north side.
Yeah.
Would be like, oh my God, the north side of the city, like, by Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
You know? And, but, yeah, it's, I mean, terrible, terrible violence. But my point is what you're saying is that, like, the places where I lived in Logan Square, which, like, I guess is sort of like, people are like the hipster Brooklyn of Chicago. And I never saw anything too dangerous, except a few times. So, like, the scariest things that happened in Chicago, there were three things that happened in my neighborhood. And I lived there for 5 years, so I felt like that was pretty good. Felt like that was pretty good.
It's, like, it's a pretty good track record.
City. Yeah. And none of them were, like, me being shot at. Right? So, like, that's or close. Me being mugged. Like, none of it. It was, but they were pretty close. Yeah. Very scary.
That's a far, I guess.
So, yeah. And two of them, like, were my fault. I should not have gotten myself into that situation. But then it got really scary. So, like, the number one scariest one was not my fault. That was when I was just watching TV, like, in my apartment. And my apartment faced the street, and it was on Fullerton Avenue, which is a pretty major east-to-west street in Chicago. It's pretty hard to go east to west in the city. And so, like, that's one of the ones that you know. Like, all right, this street, should be a lot of traffic, but at least it goes there.
Yeah.
And it's, like, major. It's not a tiny one. And so Fullerton Avenue gets a lot of street traffic. And my window in my apartment faced the street. And my back was to the window. I was watching TV. And all of a sudden, I just heard 5 gunshots. Bah, 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 bah. Wow, what is that?
30?
That's fine. Yeah, yeah. Bop, 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 like that. And I was like, oh! And then I dove on the
was
ground.
Was it like loud, or just like you could hear them like?
It was like outside on the street.
Oh.
And bop, 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 bop. And I knew it was gunshots. I knew not fireworks.
I went to school in Baltimore, and maybe once or twice, but then I lived in Oakland briefly, and it is that like, anything loud, you'd be like, I wonder if people think it's like, no, you can tell, like, when it is. Like, there's just, like, the pace of them, and it's like, there's something about it, like, even if they're in the distance, you're like, oh, that's not fireworks, like, that's a gun.
Right. No, you can tell, and I've shot guns before, like, in summer camp, I shot rifles and shotguns, so, like, I know a different sound, like, a .22 has a very high-pitched sound, actually, like, and this was like sounded like a 9mm.
These are not
like
this was not as loud.
Yeah. So, but like, well, I'm freeze when I hear the first shots. Then I hear 5, and then I dive on the ground, and I'm just like, I hear cars screeching outside, and I'm just on the floor of my apartment, just like chastising myself, like, you idiot, you can't dive after the gunshot. Like, you need to get down before number 5 comes out of the chamber. Like, when you hear 1, hit the ground.
Your reaction speed is horrible.
Yes! I hit the ground. I probably would have hit the ground faster if I had been shot. I would have, like, fallen to the ground from being shot faster. But
did you ever find out what it was?
So yeah, I waited like 10 minutes and I heard sirens and people pull up. And so then after, like, I knew the cops were there and the fire truck was there and then, like, the situation was, like, taped up. I went out there and what had happened was these two cars, one guy, it was gang members. One car had been following another for about a mile and about a mile would be able to drive to, like, pretty much the headquarters of, like, the Latin Kings in Chicago. There was, like, one section towards the west, the north, or just on the northern side of the west side. That was closer to, like, 1 mile away to the Latin Kings. And I think it was those guys and some other rival gang. And then this guy had followed another. He had driven about a mile, like, we found out the police report later. Then they got to this red light that was, like, two doors down from my house in the intersection. And they got to that red light. He pulled up next to him and fired into his car. As soon as that guy started firing, the guy was being shot at, pulled away, pulled through the red light, and crashed into the cars that were the red on the other side. The other car drove away, and the guy in the car lived. He got hit twice, and he lived, but... Oh my god, wow. That was so scary. I was like, that's not supposed to happen here. So his car was barreled into like the corner, like the light post. Yeah. The front end hit the other car that was waiting on the right side of the street going the other way. That was so freaking scary.
Did you go outside after to see what happened? Or
yeah, like, I walked outside. Once I heard all the sirens.
Yeah, you're like, there, okay, now it's
like they were talking to people. Like, I walked out and I knew a bunch of my neighbors. Like, actually, I knew the guys who lived next door. Mm. He was half Mexican, half Cuban. And the guys upstairs were Mexican. My landlord was, like, so cool. He was, like, 70 years old. He'd come from Mexico in the 70s. He had some crazy stories about Chicago in the 70s as a Mexican laborer. Oh my god. But yeah, he was really cool, but I just talked to my neighbors like, what happened, guys? Did you see anything? Did you hear anything? And that was so scary. But then the other two things that happened, those were like on that block, and they were pretty close to where that happened.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but like one night. So, like, yeah, all that's why they were the scariest things, because they happened like close to where I lived and where I spent a lot of time. So one night I was like walking home. It was maybe midnight, maybe 1 a.m. Like late, but not dangerously late, I guess. Like people are still out on a Friday or Saturday night.
Uh-huh.
In Chicago, bars close at like 2 or 4 or 6. So, yeah, there were people out at those hours. And, I was walking, but I was walking by myself, and these two teenagers started walking over cars. They were walking on the, behind me, on the sidewalk, and then they just started walking over the tops of cars that were parked next to the sidewalk. So they like step on the bumper and then go up the back windshield and then over the top and then down the windshield and then back over the hood and then hop onto the next car and walk over the top.
It just sounds like a music video.
And walking and one kid had taken off his belt and he was kind of hitting it with it. And I was just like, I don't know why, but it was really made me angry. I was just like, why are they... God, guys, stop. These are somebody's cars. Like, all of a sudden, I was the cranky old lady neighborhood watch. Totally. I was just like, these teenagers are causing mayhem on my block. And I was just like, man, I can't stand this, but I'm not gonna, like, I just want them to stop doing this.
Yeah. Just really quick on that note, last time I was home in New York, I mean, we live kind of on this, like, major... near a highway, and it's like next to a park, and so it's also right near Columbia University. Mm-hmm. So when I was home, there was like a bunch of skater kids using like that like stretch of street,
like on near the highway or like under the highway. Or...
I mean, I guess it's like still a residential street.
Yeah. So it's like the West Side Highway, which is like a major road, and then there's the between the highway and then when like houses start, there's like Riverside Drive, which is just kind of this like windy. Yeah.
Right. Like, so the skaters love to go down.
Yeah. So like they were just being really rowdy and loud, and I was like, stop having fun! Like, strummer is so annoying! Yeah. Like, I was like, Ma, like, are you just gonna like let them do this? You're not gonna call the cops or anything? She goes, just let them have fun. And I was like, mom had to tell me to chill out.
That is like the attitude I really should have had. I was just like, man, I don't like this. They're walking over these cars and like hitting them, and like they're definitely denting the fuck out of somebody's.
Yeah. Well, when they start damaging stuff, that's what it's like.
I was just like, man,
I would
hate
that.
Well, but I was just like walking home, and I was like really tired. You know, I was like sort of like tired too. Probably, I probably had been at work and like maybe gone for a beer with friends, and was walking home, and like was just like I'm not. And so I just kind of turned around, and I was like, hey, man, like that's my car, and they're like, yeah, that's your car. Is that your car? And so they
it's like, oh no, I made it worse. I made it worse.
And they come down and get right in my face. Is that your car? And I was just like, yeah, I was just saying, like, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just saying that's my car. And they were like, yeah, well, what you going to do about it, man? I was like, I didn't say I was going to do anything. I'm not going to do anything. And this guy got
I'm just trying to humanize the fact that people own those cars.
People own these cars. And they will...
Give her a gift.
Exactly. I was really trying to home monitor the situation.
Trying to hold up a mirror to your situation.
And they were going
to,
give me a wedgie. But instead of a wedgie, this kid, he's got to be like 16, gets right in my face. And I just kind of put my hands down, like, palms facing me, like, just sort of in front of my belt. Just, like, enough space in between my... I guess I was protecting my balls. Yeah. But I was just like, dude, you're getting right in my face. And, like, the backs of my hands, like, touched his belt. And I could just feel, like, handles. And I didn't know if it was, like, knives or guns. But he had, like, hard stuff tucked in his belt. And I was like... I really, guys, like, nothing, man. There's no problem here. I just wanted to let you know, like, I'm going home. See ya. And they were, like really trying to...
They were looking for a fight.
They wanted me to, like, throw a punch and then beat me down. And then, so I just, actually, I pulled out my phone and pretended to call 911 and was like, yeah, I'm on the corner of Fullerton and Milwaukee, and there are these two kids, and they fucking...
Bailed.
They bailed.
I remember one time we were in...
But it was totally my fault. I shouldn't have said anything and nothing would have happened. But I went home and just...
We were in the...
Cried.
You know, that's sort of... That reminds me of the last one of the scariest things that happened in Chicago was, like... it sort of made me realize you never know, like, what else was happening in somebody else's day or in somebody else's head... Right before you interacted with them. So, like, I was walking to work and probably, like, tired and grumpy and didn't want to be doing that, like, in the morning. Or I was walking to the subway from my apartment in Chicago, and I was, like, on this side street that's, like, half parking lot, half street. Like, it's got a bunch of diagonal parking spaces for the businesses right there.
Street side parking.
Yeah, so, like, it's a pretty, like, quiet place to sort of walk while you're crossing. Mm-hmm. And I was crossing, and, like, sometimes people will try to take that street, like, as, like, a shortcut to get around a red light or something. And so this guy, like, this SUV, like, black SUV is, like, comes, like, roaring behind me and going down that street while I'm crossing. And he's, like, honking at me and swerves and, like, almost hits me. I'm like, what the hell? And I was smoking a cigarette, and I flicked it at his car and, like, hit it as he, like, swerved around me. And I was like, you bastard. Like, you almost hit me. Honking, and then he actually ended up getting stopped at the red light. Like, that was at the end of that parking. Yeah. So I'm still walking. He blazed past me, but I make up the half-block distance, like, walk past him and, like, flick him off. And he flicks me off, and I'm just like, all right, it's the end of it. I'm sick of this asshole's driving while I'm trying to walk to work. Whenever you're a pedestrian, you hate cars.
Yeah.
Whenever you're a driver, you hate bikes. Like, you know, there's...
Everyone hates
everyone hates somebody else on the road. And so I'm walking, and that intersection, like I said, they take it to get around this red light, because it's at this weird roundabout, which is not a true roundabout. It's like a four-way intersection.
It's got lights.
With
they
lights.
They used to have those in Baltimore. It's like, what is the point of this circle that has lights?
Exactly. It, like, bends four streets into semicircles, and then puts lights on it, and you're like, what the hell? So this guy in the SUV gets a green light, drives away, and I think we're done. But he comes roaring around the other side of the circle, which is like where I'm headed. I've just crossed the street to the other side of the circle to go to the train station. Yeah. He comes blazing straight at me like he's going to hit me with his car. Slams on the brakes and comes to a screeching stop and like bumps me with his car at the screeching stop. And I'm just so scared and angry, and I slam my fist into the hood of his car. I'm like, what the hell? What the fuck are you doing? I walk around it. I get away from his car and towards the train station. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. Like, everybody's going to work and looking at this guy. They didn't see our first interaction.
Yeah.
They see this guy who was about to try to run a pedestrian that for no reason. And he gets out of his car with a tire iron, one of those like cross irons. He gets out. It's like, I'm like, I'm gonna die. And I just like, I go, what the fuck? And I like jog towards the train station and like get behind some other pedestrians. And these people are like, my God, there's a crazy man. I'm like,
yeah,
down into the train station. But it was like again, like. That was not a proportional his response.
Well, that's the problem.
Was
like,
not proportional.
Especially cars in the city. It's like, you almost hit me, so I'm like, hey, fuck you. And then they jam on the brakes. And, what? It's like, what? No, wait. You hit me. Like, you shouldn't be angry at all. Like,
yeah, I flick you off, so you're like, I'm going to almost kill you.
Yeah.
And
how
like,
dare
no,
you
no,
disrespect
no, no, no.
me?
We have a few levels before we get to that. But yeah, man, that was. So those were the scariest things, and two of them were, I shouldn't have just done anything, and it would have been fine.
Yeah.
One of them, I should have done something.
But it's also, it's like, I shouldn't have done it. Yeah, in retrospect. But also, it's like, people jumping on your car or someone almost hitting you.
And
like,
it wasn't my car.
Just,
it wasn't my car, but I said it was.
But you just
going
to not react? Like,
yeah, exactly. I don't know. I should have not reacted. But, yeah, it was pissing me off.
What did you think of that, like, newlywed couple that left Chicago after one weekend? Do you remember that? It was like a Midwestern couple, and they moved to Chicago, and they were like, they posted this YouTube video.
Oh, was it like,
crying.
It's too violent?
Yes.
No, I didn't see it, but that's what it sounds like the story is.
That's the whole story.
I'm sure that happens on a weekly basis in New York and Chicago and all the cities. Like,
well, I mean, like, I like talking about, like, so most of my experience was, like, the theater stuff, and, like... Mm-hmm. Summertime, April, spring, summer, and beginning of fall.
Yeah.
Really, really nice in Chicago.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the assumption for most Chinese people is that everyone in America owns a gun. It doesn't matter where you live, everyone owns a gun. But, I mean, I try to tell them that, you know, I lived in New York my whole life, like 20 plus years, never been violently threatened, ever.
Yeah.
But then, like, when I went to college, you had 18-year-olds coming in who, you know, some of them have never lived by themselves, and they're experiencing a new level of freedom, right? Mm. And then it was like, and within the first week, there were like four girls who got targeted.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's horrible. I'm really sorry that happened to you. You know, but then it's also like, how did it happen? Are you okay? And it's like, I was drunk in an empty subway car at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's like,
it's
hard
not to sound like victim blaming, but you do need to like teach like city survival
that's the point
skills.
Is like,
and, like,
yes,
physics.
No, I'm not saying that guy was right who robbed you or whatever.
Right.
But I'm also saying like when I say like don't be on a car. Like I'm not again not like victim blaming. It's like no, but there are like preventative measures.
Right, 8 o'clock in the morning on your way to work. Like that's insane.
Well, you also like
right.
the people who do that. It's like they can tell. They know you. Like they can read you that you are like new to the city or just like oblivious.
Yeah.
And it's like. And even if you are part of, like, you're aware of the city, is like, there's still places. Like, I mean, New York has changed a lot, obviously. I never lived there in, like, even the 90s. But, like, nowadays, like, there's very few places you can go that you'll, like, run into trouble. And you can quickly tell, like, oh, this is one of those places. I should not be here right now. Like, you know, it's...
No, I did, like, in college, I did my study abroad, which is what most people call it, but mine was in D.C. So I went from Minnesota to Washington, D.C. Yeah, it was. It was so much warmer.
Did you work? Did you like, co-op? Like, or what do they call it?
Yeah, I had an internship, like, in D.C.
Do you still go to class, or?
Yeah, so what we did was...
Some places do, like, instead of a semester abroad, you do a semester at a company.
Right. This was sort of like half and half. Yeah. This was you were responsible for finding an internship, but then we had 3 days of classes. It was a really cool program. Mm-hmm. I was a poli-sci major, and this, like, convinced me to not go into politics, to not work in politics. It was, like, my three or so months that I spent in Washington, D.C. And I, like, the place I went to college is, like, a liberal arts school that's, like, very hippy-dippy, like, freedom of ideas and learning, and so, obviously, like, you know, like, most college campuses, it's, like, mostly liberal, and I consider myself mostly liberal. I don't like really consider myself like a Democratic Party member.
Yeah.
You know, like I think the American political parties are messed up, but
that's for a different podcast. Yeah,
it's a different one. There's other people that talk about that in more educated ways than I do. But so like with being that, I thought I should like sort of see what the other side was like. So I actually interned with Paul Ryan, who's like a Republican from Wisconsin. So being from Wisconsin, I like was like, oh, I could maybe use that to work with a congressman from my state.
Mm-hmm.
They might be more likely to have a spot, an internship spot for you.
Yeah.
And he at the time was like really young and very high ranking, like in some important committees in the House. So, like, I was like, oh, I can actually see this will be a very busy office to be in. Like, so I'll get to see a lot of cool stuff. But what made me think of that, like, was D.C. is kind of the same way. Like, living in D.C. for 3 months, it's like, it used to be very violent.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend is from D.C. I mean, she's lived there her whole life, and it's changed a lot when she was there, but yeah, I don't think she was ever afraid. And when when I was there, it was nicer, obviously, than like the 80s or early 90s, but I was there in like 2007. And Barack Obama announced his candidacy when I was there president. Uh-huh. So that was really cool. Yeah.
DC as a scene is really interesting to me. Like, I guess socially, I wasn't really aware of like how not segregated, but like, how many levels there are of it. Like we went and visited a friend of mine who lived there for a little while, and it was like, oh, this is where like all the AIDS hang out, like this bar, and then if you go to this bar, it's like blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And I remember a couple of years ago, New York Magazine did like a featurette on sort of like what are like the value signifiers for different cliques and classes in the city. Like, for example, like if you live in an apartment and you have a Great Dane, like you're hot shit, right? Because like you can afford to have this giant dog, stuff like that. And so so I think about that sometimes. And so like again, like the signifiers for DC versus any other city in the country are like so distinct.
Yeah, there are like real cliques. Mm-hmm. And, like, I mean, I spend a short amount of time there, so I don't know them all. But yeah, there is like this kind of a Republican, like a country club Republican clique hangs out over here, and like the NRA guys like would go over there. You know, like they both hang out with Republicans, but very different
cliques. We've also talked about, I mean, like LA, I would assume would be similar, but it's a little more sprawl. So it's not sprawled out. But like the thing with LA and DC, coming from New York, we have industries, but we have a ton of industries. Versus, like, those are two good examples of, like, cities dominated by a single industry. So it's, like, it's so, like, when we went to visit the friend, it was, like, oh, everyone's kind of involved with politics in some way. And it's just, like,
That's
and it's
so
way
true.
More, like, casual in some ways. But it's, like, also all life is, like, political related.
Well, I saw that, like, all the kids on my program, all the other college students on my program had to get internships. And I saw, like, where they worked. Like, not everybody worked for a politician.
Yeah.
Everybody, people work for PR firms, people work for advertising firms, people work for polling companies, lobbying companies.
But it's all related somehow to that.
Yeah.
That's like the industry that runs the city.
Yeah.
One girl like worked for a judge, and then another guy worked for this group called like Rails to Trails Conservancy, which lobbies Congress to turn old abandoned railroads into like bike trails.
Oh, wow.
So that's their thing. Yeah.
As an intern, did you have to learn. So when we went, we got a tour of Congress from an ex-intern.
Yeah.
And he was telling us they built a whole new like welcome center, and now they have employees.
But yes.
Back in his day, which was not that long ago, he had to know all that.
I did it.
And you had
I
to learn, like, give people tours and stuff.
The handbook, like, if you want to become an expert, you could give the Capitol, the tour of the Capitol yourself if you went to, I think it's called Architect of the Congress.
Yeah.
So it's like architectofcongress.gov or something like that. You go to that website and you just, like, there's about 15 pages you can read. You really need to know about, like, 5 pages of it. You need to know, like, things about, like, the painting inside the dome is called The Apotheosis of Washington.
Oh,
like,
wow.
It's George Washington sitting with a bunch of other people around him.
But at least you have improv training, so you could just be like, this is
so, and then there is the really
well,
fun...
That was, this guy was like, oh, you can tell not only is he giving this tour, but he loves giving this tour.
Yeah.
It's just like... this spot right here, and then you go stand on that spot
the
right there.
Spot.
Yeah, and it's like all these stories. Like,
right.
If you look at Thomas Jefferson's foot in this painting,
exactly.
He's stepping on fucking some other. Yeah, it's like all
there's,
these great, like, history anecdotes.
I really liked that, actually. Giving a tour of the Capitol was really fun.
That's what he said. He's like, we don't do that anymore. He's like, so whenever someone has a friend of a friend, it's like, oh, I'm totally like, I'll give him a tour personally.
Yeah,
like,
we were
he
like,
got us
oh,
in
we're
early
really sorry
before
to
they opened.
Inconvenience.
Yeah, he like got us into areas that the tour doesn't go.
Oh,
like,
that's
so
great.
Fun,
if you talk to your congressman, that's
well,
one
that's
thing
what he was saying. Like,
know.
Before the welcoming center, you had to write your congressman to set up a tour. Like, you had to like put in effort. Now you can just go get a tour.
I learned some cool little, like, off-the-menu items, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, the secret menu items, like, of your congressman. So, like, that's one. That's still, like, congressional services. Like, call your congressman if you're going to go to D.C., and, like, they'll hook you up. They can get you a White House tour. They can get you a tour of the Senate building, a tour of the House building, just a whole Capitol.
Yeah. There's a lot of that stuff, like, just, like, call. A funny story, like, I don't know if we'll put this up, but my friend right now works for the mayor of New York, and he'll just have these funny stories, like, usually it's more like celebrity, but like, he like works directly with the mayor, so they're at like City Hall, and it's like, he'll get a call from like security and be like, there's a Tony at the front desk who has fresh mozzarella he wants to give to the mayor. It's like, what? It's like, yeah, some guy named Tony wants to like give a gift to the mayor of fresh baked homemade mozzarella. It's like, all right, we'll just have him leave it with security, I guess. And it's like, he doesn't want to. Like, he's like, oh, I know the mayor. Like, I told him I would give him blah, blah, blah. And he's like, all right, send out an aide or, like, send out somebody.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll go. He's like, so I go to the, you know, the front security, like, because there's, like, I've been there and, like, I've had to drop off my his keys. I was, like, staying at his house. He's like, just go through security, drop him off at the desk. I was like, you can just, like, walk into City Hall? He's like, yeah. You'll have to go through the metal detector, but yeah, you can just walk in. I was like, all right.
Yeah.
But he's like, so I went down to the front gate, and Tony Danza is there with a fresh batch of mozzarella that he wants to give to the mayor.
Yeah,
it's like,
that's great.
Really, Tony? You didn't lead with your name as
Tony Danza?
Like, you're just like, hey, I'm Tony.
Tony.
I'm giving something to the mayor. Like, just like, all right.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, man. If you have a famous resident, then those are the perks of,
I think politicians are more accessible than you'd think.
They're so much more. They are. Like, call, but it's your people. So, like, my favorite thing as an intern was giving tours.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, I got out of the office. Or just if I was allowed to, like, do schoolwork. Like, I had to do, like, a report based on work I was doing in my internship. Like,
okay.
That was sort of, like, the final report of the school program. And so for that, what I did was I got to just go listen to debates on the floor of Congress. So I would just go in there and take notes and then like pull the bills that were being proposed and just wrote a report like sort of about the strategies that Republicans and Democrats were taking to get this certain piece of legislation passed. It was just like, I was like, this is the one they were debating most while I was there.
Yeah.
So let me, and it's related to that office. I remember still, it was like, the fiscal year 07 defense budget supplemental. That was the bill. So they had already passed the defense budget, but they needed a supplemental. They needed a little more for that fiscal year.
When you get in drunken conversations with people at bars, and they'll be like, did you see what this guy did? Do you just go like, well, that's not how it works. And you just like buzzkill the shit out of people like, I read an article. It's like, just like clickbait shit. And then you're like, well, actually.
I mean, that happens a lot now. Like, a lot of Like I said, I consider myself liberal, and then I'll hear a lot of liberals like freaking out.
I do that all the time where it's like, look at what this Republican did to like defund America, and it's like, then you read the article, it's like, well, he thought about proposing a bill. It's like, so he didn't do anything.
He just kind of floated
it, and the news is like, look what he did. It's
exactly.
Like, it's, you know, it hasn't gone anywhere.
Well, that happens all the time with like Trump. I mean, like during, that you want to talk about Trump all the time of your podcast, but like when people would say like, he's going to like, oh man, like he's going to like bomb the shit out of, you know, somewhere. Like, I guess he did bomb Syria. But, like, it's just like, he can't do that.
It's more difficult than just being like, let's do this.
He's going to deport everyone. Yeah. It's like, do you know how that impossible that would be to deport 11 million immigrants? Like, it's not going to happen.
So, these two stories, which one is better? JT's story or the Raise Me Up story?
You Raise Me Up was just sort of how I was introduced to China. So I was
about You Raise Me Up.
I'll connect it to sort of what I've talked about already. It was like, I was doing a lot of theater. I took about 2 years to graduate those programs, and then had 3 years of like finding side gigs and doing, you know, industrial things or the video game or... then, like, I worked with a group, and we got a contract to do a web series, like, by these people were going to pay us if they shot it, and they, like, had a huge competition, they had, like, 30 performances that they watched on stage, and then they picked 6 of those, and they're like, you guys are going to do series, you write them for, we'll shoot them in, like, 6 months or a year. And we're like, oh, great, and we'll talk about how we're going to get that done, we'll shoot them in 6 months or a year. And then we would send them scripts, and we were working on this. Long story short for that was, like, we worked on it for 18 months and did, like, a bunch of rewrites on these scripts. They kept changing their ideas about what they wanted to be, and they were just like, eh, we're not going to shoot it. So, like, we...
Do you feel like it was, like, a scamming thing, or, like, it was just a...
Not really. I mean,
just
like,
how it works.
I think what they were doing... I think... Projects
would they like a production house or like
in New York and LA and Chicago? Like projects die all the time, but like so that wasn't a big deal. It was they were like new. They were starting a new web channel that was going to like rival like Funny or Die, but more of like a Hulu where they have their own series, something like that. That's what they wanted to do, and they had like 6 series. And I don't know if they ever got any of them in production, but we signed these contracts and we saw their website and we kept meeting with them. And they had employees. They were paying some people to work there and get these shows ready to shoot. And we were just like, we're not going to shoot it. And that got really messy with that group. Mm-hmm. Like, the group dynamics started getting really bad, like, over 18 months. And there was just, like, jealousy and, like, trying to get, like, one guy... We were basically writing the show for, like, one guy, like, as the star of the show. It's pretty natural to have one lead in anything. And but then he wasn't the best writer, and he wasn't like the best leader, but he wanted to be in charge of the writing process, which meant like he wanted us to leave it to him, which meant like he didn't really, he would just kind of jot down ideas, and then we would be like, how do we turn this into a script, man? Or like, eventually, you know, so then he'd be like, then fine, I'll do it, and put just his name on a script, and it would be like, ooh, not really.
So like, now he's hard to work with, but he does sketchy shit.
Yeah, he was doing really sketchy stuff, and and different group members started just like letting each other down and not coming to meetings and not turning in stuff, and it turned really bad. So it was that, and then some of my seeing people become successful in show business. For about 12 to 15 months and then being left without anything. And so, like, it kept feeling like not only are you dependent on breaks, you're dependent on recurring breaks. Like, so that just felt really stressful to me. I thought I could
learn it's not, like, the
control.
Big break.
Yeah, like, it needs to be a break and then a break and then a break that keeps going well and then another break. And And so, but not for everybody. I mean, some people get discovered at 19, the right person sees them and they go.
It's just like,
so there's no formula.
Yeah.
Other people hang around for 15 years. Some people are around for two or 3 years and they get picked up. like the average of people I saw developing a career was like they had been in town for about 7 years.
Yeah.
So I only stayed for 5, so maybe, you know, like well, you're really letting go.
Alternate universe town is super big.
It's really killing.
Well, that's something interesting, like listening to so many stand-ups talk. It's like, oh, I'm getting my first show. I've been doing comedy for 16 years. It's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like,
now they're going to be headlining at a club for the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, but they've done 1,000 hours, 10,000 hours of stand-up. Yeah. But I was like, you know what? And one thing I had heard a lot of people in the scene say a number of times, different people who were successful, they were like, if I was good at anything else, I wouldn't have stayed and kept doing this. Mm-hmm. And I just heard a few disconnected people say that so many times that I was like, I am good at other things. Like, I need to think about that. Yeah. Because, like, what most people see is just the finished product. And they don't see the people who never make it. And they don't see the people who make it after 15 years.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, I am good at other things. What are other things I want to do? And like I said, I had been sort of neglecting my other career.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I think I'd like to go to graduate school. I think I'd like to go to business school. But I haven't built up the resume of somebody who will do that. Yeah. I've been really focusing on this other stuff. I can still be like creative and entrepreneurial in that way. And I thought, and you know, and I'm good enough at math that I can, that I'll be, and like people skills, like I'll be able to use a lot of improv in the things I want to do. But I didn't feel like my resume was right for that. So I was talking to a buddy from college and he was like, well, I had been working like for this education consulting group in China, but like my partner and I want to start our own. And so like they started it. And then I came like 2 months after they started it. Cause I was like, great, running a startup or helping these guys start a company in China. That sounds like a very entrepreneurial thing to do that. Well, look good on my resume. I should do that. So that's how I decided to come to China, but I had never studied the language. I had never thought I would move abroad, let alone Asia, let alone China.
What did you know about China before you came here?
Well, my buddy Jack, who went to college with me, he studied Chinese in college, had come here on his study abroad. I had a bunch of friends who had been to China, like who at college had studied the language, had done programs here.
Had you traveled abroad much at all?
Like I had been to Europe in high school and I went to Costa Rica after college, like for a vacation, but that was about it.
Yeah.
That was my international experience.
Yeah.
And, but I don't know. I think I was really attracted. I'd really attracted to the things that seem like hard and different and like, so that's what this was. It was both of those things. Things that are hard and different.
Huh.
And that's what improv was. I was like,
it's an adventure.
It's impossible to get a career in this. But if I give it a shot for 5 years,
but I can do it.
I'm really happy I did. But I was right. It is impossible to get a career in that. And I was like, what career should I get? This will be cool. So I came to China knowing nothing about it, but feeling kind of like the entrepreneur's mindset is like, if I don't do this, it doesn't happen. So like, that's how you think about like, all right, there's going to be some marketing event. If I don't go, there's not somebody else that's going to go in my place to sell this thing. I'm going to go to try to sell this thing. Which was also a lot of what you do in acting. Like, no, even if you have an agent, people with an agent need to be calling their agent. Like, what are we doing here? Yeah.
Until you're viable,
they're
not like working for you.
Yeah, no. I mean, they want you to get work, but you should want to get work more.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the same in like running a small company is like you need to want to make things happen because nobody else is going to want to make things happen for you. So that was kind of the mindset I was in. I was like, let's do it. China, I'll do anything. Like, and like my fourth day here, like the jet lag had just worn off and my buddy's like, all right, we're going to go to this big marketing event. there's like 6 other companies there that'll be talking to about like 200 parents it'll be all in Chinese, but like we just kind of need you there to like be a body, fill a seat, be a white face, and I'll be a white guy in our company and show that we have Americans who work in a company that consults you on stuff in America. So, it just makes us look more legitimate to have an American there. So that's why I would go there. And I was like, well, I don't speak Chinese or anything. They're like, that's fine. We don't need you to do that. But what we do need you to do is sing a song.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, all right. Like, I'm like, business. Let's get business started.
I just moved to China.
Sing a song.
Now I'm regretting this.
Yeah. And I'm like, what? Obviously a song in English, but like what song? Like I'm thinking like what? Because I know nothing about China. Like I've lived here now almost 3 years, but at the time it was my fourth day, and I was like, what do Chinese people know about America?
Yeah,
I know they're aware of it, and I know they have some notions, and I know they've heard American music, but I don't know what American music they've heard. So I was like, how about Frank Sinatra? I'm sure he's got to be known, right?
Pretty much a worldwide safe bet.
They were like, never heard of him. The lady like said it, and I'm like, I have no idea who Frank Sinatra is. Not going to do that. I was like, okay. They're like, how about Josh Groban? You Raised Me Up. And I was like, you know that one. All right. I would not have proposed that one, but...
Frank Sinatra, who is that? Is that Josh Groban?
Josh Groban is really popular. So I was like, this is not what I was expecting, but I am going to do anything. Yeah. So I was like, let's go, man.
Yes, and.
And I learned so much. I saw so much of the Chinese culture I was going to be working with a lot, because I work with a lot of mothers of high schoolers who, like, they wanted to be seen at this event. This was actually, like, a prestigious event. You know, like, they have a board where everybody signs, right? It was the first time I'd seen like a red carpet event where everybody's signing the board. And it was just parents.
Lots of corporates do that.
I mean, it's like, it was a corporate event, but
to what, like, show you were there?
For families. Like, that was the thing.
It's
that was
kind of like a souvenir thing. Like, sometimes it's like wall decoration they'll keep up for a couple of months.
And put in the office or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, everybody signs it. You've got the signature of all the people who showed up, and these the women wearing, like, you know, the Chinese dresses that sort of fold over, and the really nice buttons, and, like, silk, and they got really dressed up for, like, a bunch of 20 and 30-year-olds who were Chinese and American and talking about SAT and purple.
Conventions.
Yeah, it was really... And then, on top of that, I could wrap my head around...
Well, you were wearing your best qipao, right?
I was not wearing my qipao. Yeah, I was not. But I was wearing a suit, and I was like, I can wrap my head around the formal wear and the sign and, like, the society event. I understand that. We have stuff like that in America. I can wrap my head around even, like, the sort of... industry convention tied in with event, like prestigious society event. I can get the meshing of that too. But then when I was thinking like business meeting, industry convention, fashion event, and like the president of Microsoft at this event is going to say, not that I'm the president of Microsoft, but that's what I'm picturing. Like,
so it's just like
event. It's
like a talent now, show event?
No. It was just like, now this guy's going to, it was like, first Tom is going to maybe talk about,
but it was on the stage. College. It was on a stage,
on
like
stage,
in front of people.
It kind of sounds like those corporate events where you have like a hype guy.
Yeah. I mean, there's an MC for sure, and a script. There's always a script.
Yeah,
it's usually two people that go over the script in detail before the event, and then they get up, they have their scripted jokes, and then the woman who's organizing this event...
Yeah, what do they got, the, like, check events and stuff?
Yeah.
Like, the reveal stuff?
She spoke in very...
Like, team building.
Like, very verse-like speech. Like, I could understand, even though I didn't understand Chinese, I could tell that she was like, these teachers, we've heard today, the future of our children, like, together... soaring to new heights. You know, like, it was just
very
verse and high aspirations. And then she was like, these teachers will support us. They will be, like, they will bring us to new heights. And then she went, like, You raise me up so I can stand when she switched to English. You raise me up so I can stand on mountains. You raise me up to more than I can be. And then they started the music, and I was like, oh, now's the time! And so I went up, and I just...
What was the reaction?
I am not.
Yeah, something like that. They clapped to the beat.
Okay.
And it's not a song with a real steady downbeat, but they were swaying and clapping and videoing, and I was like, oh my god, this is China. It was all
welcome.
Like, it was like I had definitely dove face first into a cold ocean. And
yeah.
I was like, whoa, I'm awake and I am here.
You're like, I haven't even unpacked my suitcase yet.
It was really great. I'm really happy I did it. I just saw so much. I don't know. I've learned, like, the word culture has taken on different meaning to me. Like, to me, it means even more of, like, the cultural, like, twitches that you wouldn't think of. I used to think of culture, I guess, as, like, what is the art and music and food of this place?
Mm-hmm.
But now I think about it as, like, it's like setting out oranges on the table. Like,
what's
you
important?
Know,
like, what are the,
That's not like the art, music, or food specifically.
Sure, yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, it's a little
like,
something that's important.
Yeah.
That's
reactions.
Really culture.
Behaviors.
It's like, yeah, exactly. It's the cultural.
It's owning a Great Dane.
Cultural tics. It's owning a Great Dane. Like, that's what people here do. Yeah. I have definitely, being in China has changed that for me and how I look at the world. And definitely change, like, you can't, like, when people, like, when Americans sometimes think about, like, influencing the way the world works, like, I think they need to travel abroad, and then they'll understand that you can't tell somebody who's Chinese to not do things in a Chinese way. Just
well,
like you can't tell an American,
it's like
you
don't,
stop doing that.
Like,
it's
you don't realize, especially if you come from a coastal city in America, like, when people say, like, America is a melting pot, it really is. Like, all our, like, traditions have, like, blended
and even,
like, kind of, like, watered down versus, like, China
especially.
It's like,
especially, we eat spaghetti here because it's American. It's like,
yeah,
no,
it's like, whatever.
Your
it's like,
Italian.
Just do whatever. Like, whereas, like, here, it's like, no, things are still very, like, we do this. Why? That's just how it is. Like, you need to learn that instead of, like, trying to fight it.
Yeah.
And but it's also, like, we do this because, like, thousands of years ago.
3,000 years ago.
Right, right. Like, in America, I mean, there's no reference to that like that.
No. No. And a lot of times, if you're like, we did this 300 years ago, in America, we would be like, wait, hold up, why are you still doing it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
well,
know, like,
it's such a small thing, but, like, at my company, we do a lot of analytics, and in all our things, if there's a percentage, it's, if it goes up, it's with a red up arrow. And if it's bad, it goes down with a green arrow. And I'm like, is this a mistake? Have we fucked this up?
That's
and it's
crazy.
Like, no, China, red is good. And green is bad. It's like, cool. Well, the rest of the entire
the world, rest of the
world, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
This is might confuse people. It's like, no, let's keep it like that.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Just like, I think this is wrong.
Yeah.
Down and green do not make any sense.
But it's, but exactly. That's because it's so ingrained in your brain that they're not going to be able to tell you that it's right.
Mm.
And vice versa.
And they're also so such a big, like, even modern stuff that it's like, no, we're China. We're
it's
big
China.
Enough that it's like, this is
exactly.
how we do it. Don't
exactly.
tell us how to do it. Like,
you're not allowed to have Facebook? Oh, no, we'll have our own.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're not allowed to have Google? Fine, we'll have our own. Like, and those the people who own those companies, they'll be doing just fine. And don't worry about Zuckerberg. Jack Ma is fine.
Yeah. And that's also, like, people, it's like, how do you live without it? It's like, well,
they
live
these,
without these it because they don't even know
seem
they don't
to be
have
getting
it.
Along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how do they live without WeChat? It's impossible.
Yeah,
and exactly. How does the rest of the world live without WeChat? It can do everything.
I guess we have time. Tell that.
Yeah, you want to do more?
I kind of want to hear your hazing story.
Oh, okay,
hazing
story.
Is it university hazing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Okay.
So
this
we
is, like,
again. Me and Beryl both went to art schools.
Yeah,
where there's
not real school.
No fraternities, etc. But both
don't
of
get
my
your hopes up.
Okay,
don't
well,
get your
both,
hopes
but both
up.
Of my brothers were in fraternities,
yeah.
And hearing those stories, they're always like, I know hazing these days is such a hot button thing because
right.
it goes too far. But along the lines of like growing up, especially a boy, and fucking with your friends because it's like you fuck with them, but then in the end you look back and laugh, and that's what like I think it's hysterical. Yeah. Even though obviously some people take it too far, but, well, so but I love these stories.
So that's kind of, this one comes from more of that mindset of like, this is really funny and fun, mm-hmm. and guys just kind of mess around with each other.
Yeah.
Because like I said, the college that I went to was pretty nerdy. Yeah.
What kind of nerdy?
Like, they were very nice, friendly nerds. That's what I would say. There were physics nerds. There were sci-fi fantasy nerds. There were math nerds. There were theater nerds, band nerds.
It wasn't a big party school.
Not a huge, like, everybody drank and smoked weed at the school, but
it just means like schools like that where it's like it's not a quote unquote party school.
But there were kids parties still all party, the time.
Yeah, right, but they're not like fucking like FSC or right. FSU like
right.
party kids.
Well, this is exactly this school had under 2,000 students.
Yeah,
so small. Like yeah, it's not going to be like any state university yeah. parties, and there were no fraternities, which I liked. I liked that there was no Greek system on the. So what they had instead was they had like interest houses.
Yeah.
If you got enough people to sign a petition, you could get an interest house.
I love those.
So like the Black Student Union had like Black House, and that was fine. Like it's not exactly an interest, but it was sort of like, well, the Black Student Union wants a place for Black culture and Black.
Go
and
for it.
You know what? Maybe I want to live with Black people. Is that racist? And you don't have to be Black to live there. Yeah. So, I mean,
why gotta be Black?
There you go. Yeah. No. There was Asia House. There was Black House. There was like a Jewish house, like called like Fisher House, I think. And but then the rest.
Original was Jew House, but then we decided.
Besides the demographic interests, there was also like Cooking House. Mm. There was Sci-Fi House.
Yeah. There's a lot of colleges, especially small ones, that have that where it's like. They don't call them frats,
right.
but it is like...
It's a group of
it's
people.
It's the interest house. That's exactly like house. That whole thing.
Yeah. You apply to live there because you have that interest.
Like I remember one school I toured with, they were like, there's a rowing house or like something like that. I was like, all
right. Right.
You must really love rowing then.
Yeah, so there were those sorts of things. Those places would have parties, but there were no like there was no Greek system.
Yeah.
And so there was no real hazing. Like the quote-unquote hazing that happened would be like... The improv groups or the acapella groups would wake you up really early in the morning, and like the girls' acapella group would like
force you to harmonize,
would force you to harmonize, and then cook you pancakes. And like, you've been
got
hazed.
You.
So that's my hazing story was when. So I was in different groups in college and did hazing a few different times. I really liked the improv one. Their hazing was like. They woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, threw in somebody's car, drove to the rival school's campus, and they had like this big, like limestone wall with like their campus, like symbol. It's like this lion. And then, like the year that wall was built and it's like, they have a light shining on it like all night. Cause it's like. A beautiful building that somebody paid a lot of money for. Actually, the money that came for that, you know, Waste Management, the company Waste Management, like the WM, like the founder of that is from this school.
Yeah.
And like, he was like, the story is that he was super corrupt and he put like $5 million
in Waste Management
to be like, I don't have that $5 million. I donated it to the school. And so they built this gorgeous student center with that. And we went over there and like,
the embezzlement wall.
It was. We would put shaving cream on our hands and write poop in really big letters in shaving cream. And then the next day they would rinse it off and the shaving cream would clean the limestone. And it would be, they would say poop. Like it would look like it was naturally formed in the limestone. And that was how kids like
to. Like administrators of that school is like, so, these kids think they're pulling a prank, but this just forces our lazy, like, our cleaning company to clean the whole thing every year.
So, like, that was my experience with hazing until, like, I was a senior and I was, like, in charge of the male a cappella group, the men's a cappella group's hazing.
My God. What was your acapella group called?
The Carlton Singing Knights. It wasn't cheesy.
That's not a pun at all.
No, just the Knights. It's like a really old group.
KNI
like,
or just NI?
Carl, can I? Yeah. It's like a 50-year-old group, so that's like before they were like the war.
It's like very serious. Like...
Yeah. They were just, and actually, I wasn't going to join it freshman year because I was like, college acapella, I know what that's all about. But then I like met a bunch of the guys.
Orgies. I'm not into that.
I just didn't want to wear matching like pastel t-shirts and like do choreography with our jazz
pastel
hands.
Pastel t-shirt. This is pre-Glee, like, you know. With the black tie.
Yeah. No, I didn't want to do that. Yeah, with like a fedora.
Oh my god.
No, I don't want to do that. But then I met a lot of the guys in the group, and they actually, I liked a lot of the music they did. Mm-hmm. They had a video that went viral, like with, they did Harder, Better, Faster, Stronger by mm-hmm. Daft Punk, and that like became sort of a big video in like 2005.
Oh.
And then I was like, you know what? I had like, that's a cool song choice. Like, and they're not just doing, they're arranging their own stuff. So anyway, liked them, joined them sophomore year. And then senior year, I was sort of one of the guys planning the hazing.
Yeah.
So we were going to do everything similar, like some of the traditional hazing things. Wake them up at 4, and then we throw a pillowcase on their head, and then we take them to a minivan that's blasting Duhast. you know, like, Duhast. Duhast, Mish. And there's a... And that's blasting in the van. And we drive around for a while, but we were going to do this new one that I came up with. I was like, so I want to do this new thing. We'll take them to this bridge. It's a really short bridge that's really only like 5 feet above water.
Yeah.
But if you're blindfolded, it's like over this, it's over this waterfall. And so these kids don't know campus all that well either, right? They're like freshmen who've just auditioned. We're going to take them to this bridge they've never seen. It's, like, tiny and nothing. And it's got, like, an iron railing. But it's right over a waterfall that's, like, a 10-foot waterfall. Like, a really short thing. But it just sounds loud.
And when you're blindfolded, you can be a foot off the ground. You think you're, like,
oh,
you're
like, what the hell? You hear this waterfall.
You just feel the edge, and you don't know
what it is. So... the plan is I'm going to tell these guys that they have to dive into the water. But really, like, right when I'm like, 3, 2, 1, go! We're just going to grab them and take their blindfolds off and be like, Ty, you weren't going to jump. Let's go.
It's like, that's the plan. Hit this note or we will throw you off.
Yeah.
I'm down here. You need to be down here.
You are flat again. So, I'm like... I assign group members to stand in front of the blindfolded guys. I'm like, we're going to let them, like, sway, but you catch them. Like, don't let them...
Like, the fact that you're standing in front of them is probably a good choice.
Yeah, so we're standing in front of them. They're supposed to fall forward. There's an iron railing right there. Like, they're not going to fall off the bridge. It'll probably, like, hit their chest or something if the guy doesn't catch them. But the guy just needs to catch a person standing right in front of them. And so I stand these guys... I stand these guys on the bridge, and they're assigned people, they're assigned guardians are in front of them, and I'm talking to the freshmen, the waterfall is roaring, and I'm like, guys, we brought you here because now you're members of the Knights, and we all did this when we were freshmen, and being a member of the Knights is about trust, and you just need to trust that... When you jump off this bridge, the water is deep enough. The water is deep enough. You will not hit your head, and you just need to swim to the surface. And then you remember the Knights. All right, when I count to 3, you need to jump. Are you ready? And, like, one of the guys in the group is, like, giggling and, like, listening to the little speech I'm giving the guys. He's like, like, trying not to give it away that they're not actually going to jump. And I'm like, all right, in 3... Into no, and the guy was looking away while one of the freshmen goes early and slams his head into the iron railing. I'm like, no, hey, God, I didn't say 1 yet, you idiot. Why did you go? And why weren't you looking at him to catch him? You had one job. So we take the hood off this kid, and blood is running down his forehead, and he's just. He's like this spaghetti thin, like wispy teenager.
I wanted to do like a villa.
Like a pitch fuzz mustache. And he's a bass. So he's like super skinny and he's a bass, like 17-year-old bass singer. And he's like, oh my God. And he's like, what? I thought we were gonna, like, whoa. And the other guys are still blindfolded. We have other events to do tonight before we're done. And we're like,
That was planned. That was good. We're going to separate you now, all of the new inductees. They're going to go to a different assignment while we go on to, and they went to the hospital. And we had to go talk to the dean, and like, this kid's parents are like, he was at college for 1 week, and then...
What, he rat on you?
And then, yeah, it was like...
Well, yeah, it's not very night material. Well, you're out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so he had to go to the hospital, so his insurance had to deal with it, so his parents had to deal with it. Oh. So his parents call the school, they're like, we hear that our son was injured. He received a concussion and stitches in a hazing incident.
This is that word comes and out. It was
like, yeah, that's what we were doing. But the rest of the planned activities were like we were saying, like sing an E flat. Like, yeah. Wrong. Drink a whiskey. Yeah. You got the note wrong.
But Dean's just like, God damn it, Tom. This is why we do the poop prank. It doesn't hurt anybody. Exactly. It's very innocent.
This is why we do pitch duels.
We've been doing poop for 50 years. What is wrong with you?
Yeah, we fucking, I don't know. I don't know what the moral of that story is.
Don't rock the boat, Tom.
Yeah, just, if it's been working.
Sounds like he wasn't night material.
Don't rock the boat. Yeah, that was so hazing, man. I mean, like.
Vicious.
I feel like that sort of stuff happens to me where it's like people are like, don't take a risk on that. I'm like, the chance of this happening is so low. It's like,
this is where hazing gets like the bad name is like, yours went wrong and that happened. Now picture when like severe fraternity hazing goes wrong. It's like, it's not just a guy bumped his head.
We weren't making him like eat poop. Yeah. You know, we were like,
my brother went to school.
It was only balls deep in
We're shoving at anything in any orifice.
Like it's similar. My brother went to school in Ithaca. And his fraternity, one of their like hazing things was like, it's the winter, and they were like, alright, everyone outside, snowball fight
to your balls,
don't stop till someone's crying. That was like the rule. And it was like, so we ended up stopping because some kid full force accidentally ran into a tree and busted his entire face up. And it's like, alright, snowball fight over.
See, I knew a bunch of kids. I worked at a summer camp in North Carolina. So I knew a bunch of guys that went to fraternities in the southeast. And, like, chewing tobacco is big in there and those sorts of organizations. And I knew guys who had to take a tin of chewing tobacco. Drink the stuff. But the worst one was you throw two tins into each shoe. And then you take your socks off and you have to run a mile. What happens is it cuts up your skin a little bit. Chew, and starts seeping into and you start getting just like zoned out on nicotine while you're trying to run. Yeah. I don't know why people legitimately torture each other.
Oh, yeah.
We were trying to go, we didn't make you jump off a bridge. That was going to be the punchline of ours. Like, it's nice. Look, we didn't make you do anything. And then this kid. Oh, yeah, and so then when the dean is like, a concussion and stitches in a hazing incident.
Yeah, as soon as
like,
the word hazing comes
into play,
are we going
to allow this organization to continue?
Yeah.
It's like, we sing a cappella.
Yeah, it's like, we're shutting down the a cappella.
The nuisance on campus is
both of my brothers had their fraternity shut down the year they were, like, seniors, so.
Yeah. Will not plague this campus any longer.
All right. Well, Tom, thanks for coming
in. Thank you.
And we'll wrap it up.
Thank you. Buy my book. I want you to ever think of him rock a microphone like that there boy. We still say freak. Big things happen every time we meet. Like a crack team, dying to geek. Outcasts bumping up and down the street. Slam back, Cadillac, bye-bye. Nigga, think 75 MCs freestyle to the beat. Cause we get drunk, stay drunk at the club. Should've bought an ounce, but you caught the dub. Should've held back, but you told the punch. Supposed to meet your girl, but you packed the lunch. No G to the U to the G for you. Got a son on the way by the name of Bamboo. Had a little baby girl for a year, Jordan. Never turn my back on my kids for them. Should've hit it, quit it, rag. Top, boy, you eat up, get a laptop. Make a bender for yourself, boy, set some goals. Make a fat dime out of dusty coat. Record number four, but we on the road. Hold up, slow up, stop, control. Like Janet, planet, stake on it's only a moving like floor, coming straight to Florida. Lock all your windows and block the quarters. Putting up on bail, cause the women's in order. Like a three-piece bitch before I cut your daughter. You kettle talk on bail, then I hit the border. Pity pat rapper trying to get the vibe. On my microphone, being trying to stay alive. When you come to ATL, boy, you bet not high. Cause the Dungeon family gon' ride.